Today, the 6th of August, marks the 75th anniversary of the Hiroshima and Nagasaki nuclear attacks in Japan. The blasts caused more than 200,000 deaths by the end of 1945, with tens of thousands more suffering from radiation-related conditions in the decades since. But this anniversary is more than a reflection on the past. It's a stark reminder of Australia's own history with nuclear tests throughout the 1950s and 60s. Amid escalating global uncertainty, today serves as a call for action to secure the future by reducing nuclear weapons threats. Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander listeners are advised that the following contains names of deceased persons. The Wise Soph Landau reports.
After witnessing the magnitude of nuclear weapons through the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki in 1945, the Soviet Union and Great Britain entered a race to develop their own. Eager to maintain strong links with Britain, Australian Prime Minister of the time, Robert Menzies, agreed to test British weapons on home territory.
To the Australian government and British government, it was outback South Australia and nobody was there.
Atomic weapons were tested at three sites, the Montebello Islands off Western Australia and Emu Field in Maralinga in South Australia. The testing took place from 1952 to 1963, mostly at Maralinga. Karina Lester is a Yankunjarra Anangu second-generation nuclear test survivor, daughter of the late Yami Lester.
There was a main camp and people were still living a fairly traditional life. They would go back and still go out and practice their traditional ways of living, hunting and gathering and enjoying that area for their spiritual beliefs as well, for the passing on of what we call our wabar. People were living, but there was no sort of real civilizations there, as in communities or townships. And there was one patrol officer that was responsible for covering that entire area. Still to this day, we don't know how many of our people were really impacted by those tests. People, as Dad recalls, suffered straight away. The test took place in the morning. By that afternoon and that evening, people were really feeling the effects. Our elders, my grandmother's generation, they were burying their parents. They were an older generation that was largely lost. And then people became gravely ill, rashes on their skin and diarrhea and sore eyes, and my father lost his sight probably within 4 years of those tests. By 57, Dad was completely blind. You know, that was the results of those tests.
Karina describes the ongoing ripple effects of the nuclear weapons use.
Many people became sick with cancers. And today we're hearing more about high cases of autoimmune diseases as well within our Aboriginal communities. There's this ongoing impact on Aboriginal people, whether it's mining off traditional lands or whether they're wanting to stick a waste dump on traditional lands, Aboriginal people are still being impacted by this industry. It's anniversaries like this, 75 years ago, paying our respect and honouring those who survived those catastrophic weapons and the bombings at Hiroshima and Nagasaki, that we need to speak up strong about how catastrophic these weapons really are and how they impact on the human race, and they could be the end of the human race.
The 2017 UN Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons currently has 82 signatories and 40 states parties. It requires just 10 further ratifications to enter into force and become part of international humanitarian law. Through the work of the International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons, ICAN, Australian citizens have contributed massively to the banning of these weapons. Australia is one of the few governments, however, refusing to sign the Nuclear Ban Treaty. Dennis Doherty from the Hiroshima Day Committee in Sydney says the disastrous effects of nuclear weapons makes them a threat to our entire planet.
Because they do so much damage, the result would be so catastrophic that the purpose of using the weapon would be negated by the amount of damage you do. There are countries like Australia who'd realise we're very closely connected with the United States in a military alliance. The Australian government feels that if they signed the treaty, the Americans would turn around and say, all right, the alliance is off. We feel that Australia doesn't really need a military alliance with the United States. We need to be friendly with every country. It's what world peace needs.
Through this great global network of ICAN, we can actually start to put pressures on governments of the day and hopefully get them to reconsider where we are as a nation and where we are in the globe.
Karina Lester ending that report from The Wire's Soph Landau.